Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Matt.
And welcome to the Strange and Beautiful Book Club. Welcome back, friends.
Welcome back.
I know. We got out of the habit of saying that, and I'm like, oh, I haven't said welcome back, friends, in a really long time, because I don't have to tell you what type of episode it is anymore, because we don't have like six different types of episodes all under the same roof.
Woo!
So it's time for an episode, a book episode, surprise book episode, where we will be talking about The Day Tripper by James Goodhand.
This was a like special request by the publisher.
Yeah, we were given a uncorrected proof copy, which they Ooh. Mailed
they
a
mailed
physical
us a hard
book
copy
to us.
Instead of just here's a, like
we need
an
to
ebook
act,
PDF.
We need to act like this is.
Oh right,
that
this is something that happens all the time.
I mean, we're a big deal podcaster, so
we just picked a book out of the stack of hard copies that we just receive unsolicited.
Yeah, I get like 12 a month. So this one sounded interesting, and we read it. It's not out yet. It won't be out by the time this podcast comes out. It does not release until March 19th of 2024.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go ahead and hype this book ahead of time because you need to go ahead and pre-order this book. I'm going to say it right now. This book was phenomenal. It was probably one of my favorite books that I've read this year so far. And I think I've read in the neighborhood of 20 books this year so far. So that's it's got quite a few going for it, including yeah. some really, really smutty books. And those don't even rank. This was good. You know what I loved about this book? And I think the publisher may have mentioned this in one of the emails, was this was a, it's like an anti-toxic masculinity manifesto.
Yeah. Yeah. It hits a lot deeper than I expected it to.
By a man. I read a lot of books that are like, a woman talking about what they want a man to be. And I was listening to a really good talk yesterday, the day before, where this lady had made a kind of a crack about things you can't do as a book reviewer. And one of them, she was joking, was say anything negative about the romance genre. And so, of course, everybody was like, oh, my God, you said bad things about the romance genre, which is actually the joke. So, y'all, you're the joke. Figure it out.
Yeah.
But she was saying it's not.
You're the punchline.
You're the punchline. And it's not about making a. There's a difference between generalizing criticism on an entire genre and commenting on recognizable patterns within a genre. So.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about is a recognizable pattern in the romance slash romanticy pattern. Because I read a lot of them for Feast, Sheath, and Shatter, I spend a lot of time combing through these books, whether I like them or not. And it is a lot of feminine commentary on what they want men to be. And I know there's people out there that are like, no, they're just book boyfriends. It's different. I'm sorry, story shapes culture. When you inject the culture with these stories, you are creating an archetype that people will strive for, whether that is your intention or not. And I already see it because I have younger family and they bring home boyfriends and their boyfriends have whatever, you know, pictures that get shared on the internet, and I am unwillingly privy to them sometimes, which is I see a lot of young men going to a lot of effort to be extremely muscular because that is now the male version of an eating disorder.
Not always. Absolutely.
Not always. Sometimes people have a healthy relationship with working
out. Body dysmorphia, like particularly not feeling like you're muscular enough has been, I don't know, a growing thing
yeah.
in Western society for I don't know, the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
But it wasn't always as prominent as it is now.
Right. Well, because you see Book Talk and Bookstagram perpetuating the quote book boyfriend. I want the book boyfriend. And then you see these reels of people that are like, I showed my boyfriend how to do the doorway lean. I showed my boyfriend how to do the whatever. Or hashtag if you're dating a book girl and the guy like opens the book and is reading from the book to like try to get his wife interested in having sex with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll say something wrong and she's like, never mind, we're done now. And like, haha, it's a funny joke. And I'm not saying it's not funny. I do actually have like a slight sense of humor. But also, that's perpetuating toxic. That's toxic, y'all. Like, you realize that. Not every man is 6'4", 7 foot tall, beefy, muscular, magical, giant dicks, or as I refer to them, two-dimensional cardboard cutouts with overprotective two-dimensional cardboard cutouts with giant dicks. And yeah. That's in their entire purpose, their entire personality is being overprotective. And a lot of times it manifests in romanticy and fantasy genre as actually taking away feminine agency. And it's couched in this, but it's because he loves her so much. And that is coercive control, y'all. Like, ACOTAR, one of the most popular book series out there right now, Rhysand, as soon as Feyre gets pregnant, she's not even allowed to leave the house. And it's because he's worried about her. Because he's worried about the baby. And everyone's like, oh, it's because he loves her so much. No. No. No.
It's because he doesn't trust her enough.
No. If I'd gotten pregnant and you were like, well, your days of leaving the house are over. You have to tell me what you want and I'll get it for you, but you can't drive, you can't go anywhere, you can't do anything because I'm not risking my offspring.
Right. That would not go over well.
How do you think that would have gone for you? Not great. Not great because I'm still a person even when I'm pregnant. Spoiler alert. Anyway, so having said all of that, that is the feminine narrative right now in romanticy. Romance genre. And then to see a man be like, okay, I present you a actual healthy, really high frequency, to quote Kate, like healed mm-hmm. way of talking about what men need to work on was so refreshing and so nice. It's kind of like when I read Legendborn. Or what I like to say, it's great to have representation. It's important to have diverse voices, but you can't speak for a diverse population. You can elevate diverse voices, but you should not insert yourself in the conversation because that's not your story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So to hear a man actually tell his, here's how you can overcome like a lifetime of toxicity.
Here's my therapy journey.
Yeah, here's my therapy journey. I, as a man,
in narrative form,
am that's talking compelling. About how to be yeah. healed. Was really, and it's all in this sci-fi. You know, the conceit in this book is he is having like the perfect date. It is the perfect day. He has found the perfect woman. He's having a great day. And they go to get something to drink, like have wine or something at this little cafe. And he sees his childhood bully and they get into a fight. And he wakes up the next day and it's 15 years later and he is haggard. He's living in squalor. He's pissed his pants. He's hungover and he has nothing.
Right. He's squatting somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, I guess technically someone shows up.
And says he's not renting. The rent. Yeah, he's like in a slum. He has a slum lord who shows up. Yeah.
But he's nearly effectively homeless. And he plays guitar on the street for money.
Yeah, he busks.
And he has nothing and he drinks all the time.
Yeah, he's an alcoholic. And he's squatting in this slum where he's paying money to live in this one room. And he has no idea how he got there. And then he falls asleep again. And when he wakes up, it's further into the future. It's 2019. And he is like jaundiced.
All right, first day is 95.
Yeah, the first day when he, his perfect date. His perfect date is in 1995. And then he wakes up in 2010. Then he wakes up again. And now it's 2019. And he's living in the back of a car. And
that has no fuel.
He has apparently tried to kill himself because there's a hose in the car, but it ran out of gas before he could die. And it's just, he's like, oh, what is happening? And it takes him a while to figure it out, but I don't think it takes him so long that I, as a reader, was like, come on, try to put some pieces together. It's just a lot of him being like, oh no, where's Holly? Like, where's my girlfriend? What happened? How did I fuck that up? And so it's sort of his journey of, where did I fuck that up? In fact, the prologue is him at a wedding and it's raining and he's the groom. And he hears the music because his bride is entering the chapel, but he doesn't turn around because it's not the woman he loves. And that's how you start it. And you're like, oh, okay, how are we going to get there? Well, because something happens between 1995 and 2010 where he loses everything. And you realize that he is living his life out of order. So he lives every day once.
But and then he goes to sleep, roll the dice, what day is he going to wake up in next?
Right. And so he's going to live the total sum of days that he has left in his life, but he's living them not sequentially. Because the idea is your whole life exists at once already. The only reason we experience it linearly is because of our limited human capacity. We can only experience time in one direction. And so something happened to him when he got beat up by that bully. And it sort of untethered him to a sequential life.
Right.
And it is him slowly, slowly finding out what happened and fixing it. And for a while, it's like, oh, these things are happening to me. I'm a great dude. What happened to me that, like, who did this? Who did this to me?
Right.
Because there's nothing wrong with me. And then his journey from that to, oh,
it's me.
I'm the problem is so healthy and so clean. Not clean in that it's simple, but in that every step he takes never feels like, oh, okay, here's like the plot wedge. I'll just bang, bang that in there. Every realization feels like, oh, that's exactly the moment he should have realized that. And he does.
Yeah.
And it's really satisfying because he doesn't spend, this book isn't, there's no filler. Right. I read
it,
a lot.
It feels very real and plausible.
Yeah. I read a lot of these monster fantasy books that are like 1,000 pages long, which could, in all honesty, be 400 pages long because there's so much fluff and filler. Like, for example, I just read Iron Flame with the girls on Feast, Sheath, and Shatter, and there is a whole chunk of Iron Flame where the main character is upset at the main male love interest because he's not telling her the truth, or he doesn't tell her the truth once, and so she's
like, always lack of communication.
Yeah, and so she's like, I need you to tell me absolutely everything. Meanwhile, she is keeping a ton of secrets from him. And the reason he's keeping secrets from her is because there's people that can read minds and she doesn't know how to keep them from reading her mind. Like, it totally makes sense why he's not telling her the truth, but it goes on for so fucking long. Too long. It goes on for too long where you're, as a reader, you're like, this is, you're just being dumb now. Like, I don't understand why you're not figuring, you were a smart character and now I've lost all faith in you. And it's because she needed them apart for a while so we could have our dramatic, hey, let's fuck ourselves back into a relationship. And you know what? It's fine. I'm not knocking it. If you love Iron Flame, I'm here for you. But like, that's not, doesn't perpetuate any kind of health. I mean, and it doesn't have to. Books can be chaotic. Characters can be dumb. Characters can do things that feel unhealthy. Everybody doesn't have to be rational and healthy all the time. But then when you do read a book where a character is believably unhealthy and then has a believable journey from mental unwellness to getting the help he needs to getting the life he wants, you're like, fucking thank you. Thank you, James Goodhand. Thank you so much. I needed this. Like, I needed a book where I felt like the main character was a real person.
Mm-hmm.
I read a lot of books where it feels like the main character is a caricature, and because they're just a caricature, they can't have any organic reactions to anything. Mm-hmm. And so the author just takes over the wheel, drives them a little way down the road, and then we stall out again and we get to just live with the caricature of a character. And then, oops, we got to advance the plot again. So the author inserts themselves, drives down the road a little bit farther. I never felt like that was happening in this book. We're trying to keep this spoiler-free because it's not actually out. I don't want to spoil it before you've already read it. And I want everyone to go and get it and read it because it was such a good book. What were some of your favorite aspects of the book?
Well, I wasn't really keen on it at the beginning, like when you were explaining it to me, because I like epic fantasy. So the stories where it's just a normal guy in a normal world, just trying to get by, whatever.
Yeah, you're like, that's me already. I don't care.
but the character kept me engaged.
Yeah.
And it was such a smooth narrative.
Yeah.
Of his story.
Right.
And the whole, you know, random day thing added enough of a like sci-fi fantasy vibe to it.
A little twist, yeah.
Yeah. To keep me like, okay, this isn't real life.
Yeah.
This is a story just about a guy, but, you know, there's some twist on it.
I think that was a good choice, because I think if you'd presented this as, here's a guy who gets therapy and figures his shit out, I don't know where the appeal would be for a lot of men. But if you're like, it's sci-fi, y'all, they're like, ooh, like Star Wars? And then you get him into it and you get him to read it. So,
yeah. And so he gets to see, like, to actually experience the long-term consequences of the way he's living his life in a way that informs how he acts in the past.
Yeah.
So this is actually a practice I've heard of where you, like, self-development in general, is you imagine, like, the worst case scenario for what are my biggest flaws? What if those dominated my life? What would my life be like in 10, 20 years? And you imagine that, visualize it, and make it as real as possible so that you can use it as leverage to motivate yourself to not indulge in those vices. And this feels like a really, really cool version of that told as a sci-fi story.
Yeah. And I really liked the female character, Holly. I felt like Holly was an actual character. Go figure. I liked that her identity is not actually tied up with Alex's identity.
Mm-hmm.
She's with him because she likes being with him. Even when his only ambition is he wants people to look up to him.
Yes. He wants to be well regarded.
He wants to be well regarded. And she's like, well, I mean, okay. He's like, what do you think? That's short-sighted. And she's like, well, I think it's a little selfish. Yeah. But like,
shallow, maybe.
It's a start. You know, it's a start. And then eventually, you know, he's just a pub manager. He's like an assistant pub manager. And she's like, I mean, it's fine. It's what you want to do. So it's okay. He's like, well, you're making more money than me. And she's like, well, what difference does that make? Because she's a doctor. She ends up becoming a doctor. And she stays with him for a while because it's like she's not judging him for his choices. She just wants to be with him because she likes being with him. And she is complete in and of herself. And she is with him because she enjoys being with him. And she doesn't require his presence.
Right. And in fact, most of the other characters in the story, their fates don't depend on anything he's doing.
Yeah. And it's never her job in the book to fix him. Like, she never is the character that's like, my magical vagina will cure your alcoholism, so I'm going to stay with you because look at this magical vagina. Look how magical it is. And I always hate that narrative because that's a toxic narrative in real life, too, that I can fix him. In fact, in our most recent episode of Feast, Sheath, and Shatter, I was complaining about one of the characters because they're extremely immature and they end up with this very mature female character. And I was really upset about it because I felt like the mature female character never would have chosen that character in real life. And my co-host, Kate and Hannah, were like, no, that's what it's like when you date a bad boy. That's what dating a bad boy means. And
but why would you want to date a bad boy?
What was the acronym you called it? You used... fuck it out of the gene pool.
Oh, yeah.
We can fuck this out of the gene pool, y'all. We just got to stop having babies with the douchebag dudes. Like, anyway, that's a whole other soapbox. But I did like that Holly, it was never in Alex's mind, is it Holly's job to fix him?
Right.
He's trying to figure out how to get her back, but it's never, why did she leave me? She should have stayed and tried harder.
Right. And his own premise that he is the only one that can, like, actually do work to fix himself is kind of reinforced by the plot.
Yeah.
Because he can't just, like, say, I'm going to spend a week with you, and at the beginning of the week, I'm going to explain, like, here's my trauma.
Yeah.
And I can, like, offload my trauma onto you with an expectation that you will put work into, like, fix me, because he doesn't have that kind of continuity.
Right.
The only continuity he has is his own mental journey.
Yeah.
Going day to day. And that kind of constrains him to the perspective that he's the only one that can put the work in to fix himself.
Yeah. I mean, part of his journey is realizing what he has control over and what he doesn't have control over. And I think that's an important part of it. But I think that there were definitely things he could have done in this book that would have made him an unforgivable character.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think at any point he becomes an unforgettable character. Like, you're rooting for him to get better the whole time.
Yeah, definitely.
You're never like, oh, you deserved that. And I hate you now, and I'm glad your life sucks. It's like, no, oh no, Alex. Like, we're going to get out of this. I'm going to keep reading. We're going to figure out how you get out of this.
Because
he finds out some pretty earth-shattering stuff about himself and about some of the things that he does in the gaps between when he's aware and when he's not. And he reacts in a way that makes you feel even more sympathetic towards him instead of antithetical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you don't... There's never a moment where you're like, oh, he's the willful bad guy.
Right.
He is the unwitting bad guy in some situations, but only because of the way he feels he has to be because of societal pressure.
Right.
And it's really interesting to watch his journey away from that into realizing, like, oh, this is my life. I get to do what I want to with my life. And I really am letting other people have too much control over me. Like, in one hand, I'm saying that I'm responsible for myself, but then I'm also only working to please the wrong people. And I really felt like this is a narrative that is needed and is important, because we're watching, like, the death throes of that toxic masculinity culture. I mean, that's why they're so violent right now, is because they are well aware that they're on the downswing.
Yeah.
That's why there was such a violent reaction to Barbie. That's why there's such a violent reaction to Taylor Swift showing up in their football stuff. Was it you who showed me the thing that they did that study and found in movies, if a group of people is composed of 16% women, it's perceived as 50-50? So
I have not heard of
this. So they did this big study because people were complaining about, like, there being too many females, like, about representation, basically, for females. And if a group in a movie is 16% women, it is perceived by men as 50-50. If it exceeds 36%, it's seen as majority female. And then they did another one where they gave men and women both the same script to read mm-hmm. and had them read it and showed it to a bunch of dudes. And the men unilaterally perceived the women as being emotional and hysterical and the men as being calm and collected, even though they were reading the same script in the same tone.
Wow.
So mentally for men, women take up a lot of space, apparently. I don't know. I don't feel like I take up.
I would say that yes.
Yeah.
In a man's mind, a female takes up a lot of like perception.
Yeah.
Or it pops up as significant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that makes sense. But what they were referencing in the video, in the thing I was watching, was the fact that Taylor Swift isn't even in a whole lot of football stuff. But because she's a woman, she's perceived as taking up the majority of screen time.
Right. She's just like, from what I've seen, it's just here's a football game. And when things are really slow, oh, look, here's 3 seconds of Taylor Swift up in the box watching the game. Okay, back to the game.
Yeah.
And she gets like 10 seconds of screen time over the whole game.
Yeah, but like, there has been a violent like backlash because of her inclusion in this traditionally toxically masculine space.
Yeah.
Which cracks me up because it's a bunch of dudes in spandex running around like thumping into each other and grabbing each other's asses. I'm sorry, that's the most gay thing possible. And yet it's like the masculine space. Who's going to grab each other's ball? I mean, come on. Okay. So.
Right. And I used to riff your dad about football. Well, first I would say I would play like he was talking about soccer, football.
Yeah.
And because I've had enough like non-American friends that when they talk about football, they're talking about soccer.
Yeah.
And so when your dad would say something about soccer, I'd be like, oh, or about football, I'd be like, oh, you mean American football?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I don't watch that.
Oh, I know, he hated it. And
then one time I was like, oh, yeah, a bunch of muscly dudes in spandex.
In tight spandex.
Running around trying to grab each other's balls.
Yeah.
It sounds like something I'm not really interested in watching.
I'd probably watch that. But anyway, there's been a huge backlash, and now Beyonce has like a top performing country album.
Ooh.
And even Dolly Parton is talking about doing like a couple of collaboration songs with her, and Dolly Parton's like, I think it's really great, y'all. And honestly, it's hysterical to watch. I mean, it's tragic and awful, but to watch all of these conservative people be like, oh, now we got to boycott Dolly. That's like cutting them off from Jesus.
Yeah.
This is not the place for that discussion. But what I'm saying is this is a ripe time to have a book like this because we've set men adrift. We've mm-hmm. taken away their safe spaces. They're the toxic masculine men, the I am way too concerned about my dick and other dudes' dicks. Dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Andrew Tate incel groups of people that are like, oh, fuck women, you know. Or like, I have some friends who are on dating apps, and sometimes I get sent pictures of like male profiles, and they just look like, there's the phrase, women are reluctantly heterosexual or heterosexual against their will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because men are literally such scum. Most men are literally just awful. And women have to pick from like bog slime, basically. Yeah. And so what we need to do is push the narrative towards it doesn't have to be that way. It never had to be that way. And the fact that men, like the sociological men, are clinging to this outdated masculinity construct is utterly ridiculous. Like, if I saw a guy wearing makeup, I would in no way feel like that made him less masculine. In fact, it would be like, oh, he's probably interesting. I think I'm going to go talk to him.
Right, because they're confident enough or motivated enough to do, like, put on makeup to achieve what they're trying to achieve without worrying about the negative perception by other men, which is the, like, driving force is oh, I'm going to be like negatively perceived or acted towards by other men.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I don't have very many guy friends.
Well, because you, I don't know. No one should be forced to perform for other people. That's just ridiculous. As long as what you're doing isn't harming anyone, go off. Do what you want to do. Wear makeup, have long hair. I don't care. If I saw a guy with long hair and makeup, talking to him would be interesting because either A, he's not interested in women and we could have an actual conversation where he's not just ogling my tits, or he is interested in women. But he's cool enough to not care what other men think. And so he's probably a catch. And that's what's going through my head when I see a guy with makeup. And then I see other men be like, oh, don't men today have lost all their self-respect? Be like, no, you're a coward. You're just a coward. You know that, right? Like not being willing to step outside of your little box because any touch of the feminine will destroy your masculinity. Right. Your terrible, fragile little eggshell of masculinity. Who is the stronger man in this equation? Just, I'm going to put that on the table for our male listeners, which I don't think we have very many.
So in short,
yeah,
it's really good.
No, I've, yeah, yeah.
And
I just think this book is talking about fragile masculinity.
And it's and like so, at the right time.
And it invites a lot of discussion about it. Mm-hmm. This would be a great book club book for a bunch of dudes to do together. Especially the guys that are like, let's read Brandon Sanderson. And then all of a sudden, they're like, and J. George R. R. Martin. And then let's read this book. This would be,
well,
this would be good.
On the topic of yeah. like tackling like men's issues in fiction, one of the things about like the Stormlight Archive, Brandon yeah. Sanderson's series, is there's a lot of like healthy discussion about mental health stuff.
Yeah.
Like one of the main characters has like recurring depressive episodes and they have to deal with it. And they get support from their people and their yeah. magical companions. And but different characters have different mental health yeah. problems and they get to like enact that and process that as part of their like dialogue amongst each other. And so not to just to add some context to yeah. your Brandon Sanderson comment. Yeah.
He's gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has
gotten a lot better. And I think fantasy and sci-fi is the forum in which we will discuss this, where this discussion will probably happen most. Mm-hmm. And it's the same reason Star Trek did what it did. Because you can tackle
social cultural commentary.
Yeah, yeah, you can add a lot of cultural commentary in. Well, I'm not talking about us. I'm talking about dragons. I mean, come on. Male dragons, you know, posturing for other male dragons and driving off females. And so who's actually at fault for driving the females off? Well, it's the male dragons. Because the male dragons won't make their scales shiny and shit. Like, you know, that's where you put the discussion because it's safe. It's safe.
Right.
And you don't, you know, if you put it in football, clearly you're going to get death threats because that's what's happening. And it's utterly ridiculous. Just so fucking ridiculous, y'all. We love Taylor Swift. You know, there's actually a very predictable curve for female celebrity. And female celebrities will reach a peak of popularity. And then as popular as they are, they will be hated. It will immediately invert.
Right.
Like that happened with Jennifer Lawrence. She was everybody's doll. She was perfect. She was in everything. Everybody loved her. And then all of a sudden, we fucking hate Jennifer Lawrence. She can never be in anything ever again. And it happens predictably, repetitively. And like you can look it up. There's sociological papers written about it. And that's what's happening to Taylor Swift right now. She hit the pinnacle of popularity. And now as popular as she was, we've inverted it.
Right.
Yeah. Like she's become an immoral character. Like you can't like her. Jesus doesn't like it when you like Taylor Swift. Anyway, that's a whole other discussion. The intermingling of fandom and religion.
Right. As a thing you identify as.
Yeah.
Which is something historically religion did.
Right.
Is it gave like a common group identity.
Yeah.
so that you had like a shared cultural narrative.
Right.
And with that kind of fading out, you have to have something else.
Yeah, something to drive community.
But you're going, everybody's going different directions as to like their shared cultural narrative is like splintering.
Right.
And so that's part of the meaning crisis.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because it keeps you from being able to enjoy a wide variety of things because you have to be loyal to your religion, whether that's Sarah J. Maas or Star Wars or whatever.
But if it's the only thing you have, then
yeah.
It's kind of the low-hanging fruit. It's the aggression. Right.
It's the aggression right. That gets to me. I'm the only one who's right. No one can criticize me.
And it's a kind of an expected result of everybody becoming more isolated.
Right. Because even though we're more connected, we're also more isolated. There are
fewer things siloed. In everybody's lives.
People become siloed.
So that each thing that we have has to do more for us.
Right.
From a personal meaning fulfillment perspective. Yeah. So our romantic partner has to be everything.
Yeah.
Our entire social life. And our interests, our fandoms, have to be everything because we don't have any other, like, social activity. My fandom is the only thing that provides me, like, social feedback. It's my everything. It's the only thing that gives me that sense of fulfillment. And so now that has to provide all of my personal meaning and fulfillment, like a combination of religion and community activities and work and hobbies and everything all used to contribute a little bit. And so when you put all your eggs in one basket, it's a pretty toxic basket.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it. In short, go buy this book. Again, it is The Day Tripper by James Goodhand. You have to pre-order it because we were given an advanced reader copy because we are super, I can't. I'm just grateful we got it. I don't know. And I was like, oh, look, a real book. And so I read it and it was really good and I really enjoyed it. And I just want everybody to read it because I think it was so good. And I know we got off topic because I think it's the change in the weather.
Yeah.
It's the spring because we did that in the last movie episode too. I don't know. Somebody referred to it. I forget. They were talking about like this, a style of podcasting. And I was like, God, I hope that's not us. But yeah, it's probably us. And I think it was like coordinated yelling. And I was like, it's not us. We talk about all the important stuff at the beginning. And then if people quit, that's fine. Cause we talk about a lot of other interesting things that I find interesting at the end. So yeah, I think we'll just leave it here before we get any more sociological about this.
So remember, sometimes the strangest things are the most beautiful, too.
So be who you are and love what you love. Until next time, friends.
Bye.